I want to share with you an idea from Rav Eli Elopian Sefer called Lev Elio. So I'll say it sort of in my own way, a little bit in my own order, but it's totally and completely his basic presentation. In last week's parasha, Parshas Noach. So sometimes you find reference to Adam, but sometimes you find reference to Kol Basar. What does Kol Basar include?
Kol Basar
means all flesh.
All flesh.
So what does it include? Is it just man? It includes all the animals, except for just basically one exception, right? Except for fish. Fish apparently weren't included in this. But anything else seems to have been included in it. Kate's called Basar Balefanai. That. And you find in Pesukim later that it's very clear that Kol Basar refers to all living things basically except for fish.
Who's this rabbi again?
Rabbi Elia Lopian.
Rabbi Elia?
Yeah, Rabbi Elio. What everybody called him, Elia.
Rabbi Elio, what's this?
What?
What's the last name?
Lopian.
Lopian.
Yeah.
Pion?
L-A or A-L-O. It sounds like it should be L-O, but sometimes you find it spelled L-A. L-O-P-I-A-N. Lopian. What?
L-A-L-I-O.
Yeah, that's the name of the Sefer. So the way that I want to ask the question is like this. Now that, once we know that Kol Basar refers to animals, not just man, so you see in the very beginning of Parshas, Vayara Likim Esaret V'nei Nishchasa, Hashem saw the world, and it was corrupted. It wasn't destroyed, right? It was corrupted. Ki Hishchis Kol Basar Mistarkoi Ala Oretz, because all flesh had corrupted its ways on the earth, on the world, yeah? All flesh. So that includes the animals. So you know what Rashi says? Afilu behema chayav oifen yizkakon shenem minon. Even the animals were breeding or crossbreeding. Okay, so that's one place you see this. It doesn't say, Rashi's presentation is not that this is what man was doing to the animals, because the Pashut Pshat in the Pasuk is the Hishchis Kol Basar. That the animals were doing it of their own accord. Yeah? Okay, that's A. B, we spoke about this. At the very next pasuk says, Yomer Likim Lanoya, Kate's Kol Basar Balefanai. The end of all flesh has come before me. Why? Ki Mala Aretz Chamas Mipneihem. V'hinani Mashchisam. So, linguistically, Hashem says to Noyach, I'm going to destroy the world. Well, he says, the end of all flesh has come before me because the world is filled with Hamas in front of them, before them. And in the words, v'hinani mashchisam, what does mashchisam mean? How do you conjugate that? Mashchisam. It's a contraction, right?
There.
What's the appropriate translation of mashchisam? Mashchisam sounds like a funny word. Our ear is not used to that. V'hashchis, ani ashchis. That we're used to. What's mashchisam?
Or you.
So v'hinani means I, that I'm going to what? Mashchis, cha. He didn't destroy Noach. So what does he mean? Mashchisam.
Them.
Oh, some. V'hinani mashchis, I am destroying, or will destroy, I am destroying, oh, some, them. Mashchisam, I'm destroying them. So that sounds like the end of a pasuk, right? V'hinani, the kate kovas are balafanakim, ala aris hamas mipneh, v'hinani mashchisam. What?
Esar.
But what's Esaretz? So the last two words of the pasuk is, and I'm going to destroy them, Esaretz. It doesn't make any sense. Linguistically, it doesn't make any sense, right? Are you with me? If you take a look at the pasuk inside, you'll see right away. The pasuk doesn't linguistically make sense. V'hinani mashchisam. That's the end of the pasuk. V'hinani mashchisam. Behold, I am destroying them. Esaretz. Esaretz. If you want to say, V'hinini mashchis es ha'aretz, I get it. Mashchisam SRS is not correct. You see it? So that's why Rashi comments on this, because Rashi's bothered. This is a very shver pasuk. So Rashi says two pshatim. Number one, we'll retranslate S kamo min haaretz. I'm going to destroy them from the aretz. Where in the world do you find S meaning from? V'doymalei ketzesi es ha'ir. Ketzesi es ha'ir, when I leave the city. So Rashi says, oh, so you see, there's another place, there's another example of this, where S can mean from. Okay? That's his pashut pshat. Rashi has a second pshat. He gives another example also. But then he says second pshat. Dabar achar. Es ha'aretz im ha'aretz. Es here means with, along with. V'hin mashchisam ve'es ha'aretz. And also the land. Im ha'aretz. She'af, you know, he doesn't give any other examples where it appears like this. He just says, she'af shleisha t'vachem shel oimek ha'machresha nimorich v'nitash t'shu. And even, also, that even three t'vachem, which is the depth of the plow, were, liquefied, destroyed, whatever you want to call it. Nitash, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah? Tishtush. Uprooted, mixed up. So there was a necessity, apparently, according to the second pshat, to impact three tfachim of the earth also. Yeah?
Yeah.
Strange. So you find in these two examples that, can we all agree that the earth doesn't have free will? The earth didn't do anything wrong. Did the animals do something wrong? Seems like it. Is that the result of free will?
No.
Probably not. So what's going on over here? So that's the question. The answer, before we develop it more, the answer is that if you take a look, there is a medrash that's quoted in the Mesilas Yesharim. So like everybody knows it from Mesilas Yesharim within the medrash. But the medrash is, and he quotes it here from Koheles Rabbah Perek Zayin Perek Yitzes. B'shoa shabara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adam HaRishon. The moment, the time that Hashem created Adam, Netaloi ve'yichzera kol ilana Gan Eden. We know He put him into Gan Eden. He didn't create him in Gan Eden, yeah? He put him in Gan Eden. And when He put him in Gan Eden, He gave him a tour. And He said to him, Re'ei ma'asai, take a look at my creations. Come and know Him. How beautiful, meshubachim, how praiseworthy they are. V'chumashe barasi b'shvilcha barasi. Everything I created, I did it for you. Put your mind, I mean, pay attention, be careful. That you don't destroy, mess up my world. So it sounds like he was telling you to be careful with, like, you know, fossil fuels. Make sure not to use up all the raw material, right? This is the proof for environmentalism. No? Probably not. Pashup Shah, since Adam Rishon was not involved in fossil fuels or any of these things, it wasn't an issue of stam batashkes, that he's don't just destroy the world. That what the Kaddish Baruch Hu meant, and this is what the Mesilas Yesharim explains, is that the way that you'll destroy my world is by destroying yourself. You don't only impact yourself. You actually impact the entire world, and that includes the physical world as well. Let me ask you a funny question. You probably never thought of it like this. Tsaras. We know that when it comes to tsaras, there's the possibility of tsaras affecting a physical building, yeah? When we imagine the chiddush of tsaras, when we think about what's unique about that, is it pshat that this is so unique because the spiritual, the aveira, impacted the physical? Or is it that this is unique because in this case we can see it in the physical? It's recognizable, it's expressed in the physical. So I think we generally assume it doesn't usually express itself in the physical. It doesn't happen that way. This is unique because it affected the physical. No. Pshat is, it's unique because you can see it in the physical. So the Kohen comes and he says something, and the person realizes what he does, and he has the ability to fix it. But it's unique. Who says it doesn't usually impact the physical? Who says? So that's the Yesod, and I want to go through his piece with you, but that's the Yesod HaDvarim, is that you see from Parshas Noach a very, very important Yesod, which means a foundation, something very important to realize, is that when a person does something positive or something negative, it doesn't only impact some sort of abstract ruchnias, but the abstract ruchnias impacts the physical. So because Noach, not him, but because a generation had done what they did, it changed the animals. And animals were crossbreeding with each other of their own accord, without Bechira, but because they had been corrupted. And apparently because man had impacted with the three tefachim of the ground, so impacted three tefachim of the physical world had to be destroyed, in quotation marks, with the Mabul because of what he did. He says that when he, this is Rav Elio, when he was in Lomz, that was where he was in yeshiva in his youth, he said there was a hospital. It was an ancient building. He said it was built out of these thick wood, like it was a really old building, and it was functioning as a hospital when he was there. And he said, he was in yeshiva, see, he said that apparently people were coming to the hospital with one issue and getting diseases in the hospital. And Rahman al-Azan, they were dying. And the craziest thing was, they were getting diseases in the hospital that the people hadn't seen in years. So nobody could figure out how they're getting sick. So they brought in all of these experts, and the experts concluded it's because all of the contagion had been absorbed in these thick walls of the hospital. And because this and that, the other thing, whatever, however it happened, so they're coming out of the wall and they're reinfecting people. It had been absorbed into the walls. So he says, Mashallah, Ma'adav Radayma, that's in the physical world, but the spiritual world does the same thing. That Ruchnias can impact the physical. And he says, you see it in the physical, but you see it even in the Ruchnias. That's what's going on. That's what we're being taught in Parshas Noach.
What's the exact definition of Ruchnias?
Spirituality. Yeah. He says, you should know. Shebabayas shegarasha mishpacha, shalei sharma tarasa mishpacha, ishechilu as a Shabbos v'chadoyma. In a house where the people that lived there weren't careful about tarasa mishpacha, right? Hilchas nida. Or they were machalo Shabbos or the like. Noldim behabayas, they produced, they create in that house, nigoyim gidoylim v'nivloyim b'kiroisov. Machla is ruchania, spiritual disease. Spiritual contagion. When nichnas l'der b'bayis, says that person goes to live in such a home, yeshlei lefached, he should be afraid. Shlei yidbegu v'chas v'shalom me'machlas ha'nefesh, that he shouldn't get spiritually impacted by that. Crazy, right? He points out that the Mishnah and the Goyim, you know, this is like a joke, you know, there's a Rebbe once giving a shir, and he came to this Tosfos. Tosfos, he couldn't work out the Tosfos with the shir. It was very challenging. So he gave up. And he says, a shver Tosfos, a very difficult Tosfos, impossible. He says, we're ripping it out. So Rebbe, but there's a Tosfos on the other side. So he goes, no. Oy le Rasha, oy le Shechinoi. What was to the Rasha, what was to his neighbor? Too bad. This is a phrase that comes from the Mishnah and the Goyim. The Mishnah and the Goyim, is Tziraz. The Mishnah Goyim says sometimes you can have a situation where two people share a wall. Yeah? It happens all the time. In apartment buildings, even in you know, houses that are joint houses. They share a wall. So you can imagine a situation where the Rasha on one side of the wall says Lashon Hara and all kinds of things, and the wall gets Tziraz. Sometimes you can scrape it off and then it doesn't come back. So you got to get rid of the whole brick. You have to remove the brick from the wall. But that means it doesn't only impact the Rasha, it impacts the Tzaddik, that is on the other side. It's not fair. So, oy le Rasha, oy le Shecheinu. Woe is to the Rasha, woe is to the Shecheinu. You chose to live next to a Rasha. There are consequences for living next to a Rasha. So he says, what does that mean? It means that the Rishus of the Rasha has impacted the physical, and the physical is impacting the Tzaddik. Just recently, I got a shayla that I didn't get an answer to yet about shot glasses. Because Ashkenazim and Sephardim have a big machlekes about this, right? About glass. Is it absorbed or not? Ashkenazim have a chumrah, and we assume that glass absorbs. Sephardim hold it doesn't absorb at all. Can't make a trade. Ashkenazim hold it's like cheres. It's like it's pars. So says a chumrah for Pesach for sure that if you have glass that was used like shot glasses for whiskey, for alcohol, things like that. So then because alcohol is so sharp, it can get absorbed more easily than other things. We find this in other areas like onions and things like that, pineapples. We do have a concept that even Sephardim agreed to, that something can be a Dabar Harif and it's more easily absorbed. So you can imagine, that's an halach and also, that's another example of the same idea. That sometimes you can have something that's a Dabar Harif, it's something that's so potent that it impacts the physical, like it's absorbed into the walls in ways that normally would not. Normally to absorb into a wall, you need a heat source. Yeah? If you stick something cold into something, it doesn't get absorbed. But not a davar charif. A davar charif can have an impact beyond what normally the impact should be. So that's what he says, is that we have to be aware that the averos can impact the physical world. And FYI, works in the positive as well. That when a person creates a makom of kedusha, so there's an absorption of kedusha in the walls, and a person can be positively impacted by the kedusha. A reason is that the aven in a shul even be chidus. A reason to learn in a base midrash. See, he says even tzaddikim are impacted by this, and you might not expect them to be. When the Gemara talks about kriya shma l'amita, which is like we should actually discuss the halachas at one time. We weren't discussing Krishna Alamita. So it talks about Cheref Pifiyos B'yadam, that the tzaddikim hold a double-edged sword in their hands. What's a double-edged sword of the tzaddik? What are they with the Jedi Knights of lightsabers? What are they doing with the double-edged swords? No, it means Krishna Alamita. Krishna Alamita has this capacity to protect them by ripping to shreds, or protecting them from all of the mazik and all of the evil forces. He says, I don't understand. They're tzaddikim. Where are these evil forces coming from? If you're talking about a Russia, you're talking about a person who's always creating evil forces. Okay, so he's surrounded by evil forces. Where are they coming to the tzaddik from? So he says, they're coming to the tzaddik from all the other people, from all the other places, from everything that's around. So they need this shmira. That's the shmira. He says, you know how far it goes? Adam HaRishon wasn't supposed to die ever. Until he ate from the Eitz HaDaas. Kibya machol chomimanu mostamos. So they eat from it, you're surely going to die. Now, they didn't die when they ate from it. The Ramban and other Mefarshim explained. Because it didn't mean that the punishment is death on the spot. It meant that you have a more spiritual existence. After you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you have a physical existence. And death will enter into the possibility. You will die eventually. Otherwise, you never would have died ever. So when they came to Har Sinai, Chazal tell us, paskuzu amasam, that this filth of the Nachash had left them, and they had regained the level of Adam HaRishon, Kodem HaChit. Which means they weren't going to die.
Who?
Klal Yisrael. When they stood at Har Sinai, yeah, in order to stand at Har Sinai and come in the presence of Hashem, they regained that level. But they made the Egel. And the Egel has a lot of parallels to the Eitz HaDaas, and they fell back to the Madrega again. Yeah? Says Rav Elia, where was Yehoshua this whole time? Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, was on Har Sinai. How come Moshe Rabbeinu died? The answer is okay, you'll say, because Hashem punished him for hitting the rock. But what about Yahushua? He was halfway up the mountain, waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down the day they were making the egel. And Moshe Rabbeinu listens and says to Yahushua, what's that sound I hear? And Yahushua says, wow, it sounds like war. It sounds like terrible things. And Moshe Rabbeinu corrects him. He says, nah, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like something else. So Yahushua had no idea what was going on. No clue. No clue they had made an egel. So how come he died? So Teretz says, because that impacted the whole world. Egel impacted the whole world and it impacted Yahushua, even though he had no part in it whatsoever. No part whatsoever. Never thought about that. So this is a little scary. So he says like this, Chazal tell us, Gemara Megillah Chalchesem and Aleph, Asur lehistakel b'tzelem demus adam rasha. You're not allowed to gaze at a rasha. Yeah, you've heard this before? I have a whole shir I gave on this one time about how far that goes and what about if it's just a picture and you know all these kinds of things. It's a whole conversation in halacha. What exactly are the boundaries of this? But there is Chazal say this.
Asr to gaze at the tselem demus of a Rasha. And the Marsha says the reason is alpimasha amru chachme ha-kabbalah. It has to do with Kabbalah. Sheshayra al harasha ruach ha-tumah. Because there's a spirit, there's a spiritual tumah that rests on the Rasha. So he doesn't quote so much from the Marsha. He just says the reference is the Marsha. That's what he says. There's a spiritual thing here because there's a tumah on the Rasha. So this is how Rav Eli explains. Because if a person looks at the face of the Rasha, Yishra gam alav ruach hatuma. So the ruach hatuma spreads to the person gazing at the Rasha. Why? Ki ha'inayim besarim, the flesh eyes, the physical eyes of a person, hanirim lefaneinu, lamita shel davar, himeinam mehavim shum koyach shel etzem hara'iyah. Eyes in and of themselves don't see. Right? An eyeball doesn't see. An eyeball is just a window. If the seicha, if the intellect, if the brain is functioning properly, it utilizes the eye to bring in all of that information. The brain processes it, flips it upside down, we know. And then we're able to perceive and to see. Chena davareza, kikoyach ha-re'iyah kikoyach ruchani. What it really means to see is really a spiritual power. Because the source of it is in the brain. We perceive everything in the brain, right? We don't perceive anything in the eyes. All of the sinews, whatever you want to call it, all of the pathways to the eye, it goes from the brain. The flesh eyes, the physical eyes. Therefore, when a person gazes at a rasha, it's entering into his mind. That's what he says. It's entering his mind. And that's what gives it the capability to bring in a koyach hatumah. Because what we see is not just an image. The image is always being processed within the person in his mind. And that's where the corruption, chas v'shalom, rachmana litzlan, can occur. That's why Chazal say, not allowed to gaze at an adam rasha. It's not a midas chasidus ba'alma. It's not just like an extra thing that a chassid would do. Ela isur mamish, he says it's a prohibition. A person that transgresses this and is gazing at a rasha, let's say, he'll notice about himself. He'll have bad thoughts. He'll have bad thoughts because it's in his mind now. And he's going to think to himself, whoa, that was so weird. Why in the world did I just think that? Why do I have such a taiva? I don't usually have such a taiva. It's crazy. What's going on over here? Gaiva or kadoima. He says, the idea is, because that spiritual corruption of the Rasha went into his mind. And it became part of his thought process, part of what he wants, what he's thinking about at least. It's even possible that because of that, the Rasha has already caused him to have a... He's prepared a place for him in Gehenna, that he has to be cleansed of this. So now we can understand something really unbelievable, really astonishing. There was a fellow, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that he was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. And at the end of his days, not in the beginning, at the end of his days, he became a tzduki. Totally off the derech. He says, well, how could that be? A Kohen Gadol 80 years? Isn't he supposed to die when he goes to the Kodesh Kedashim and he's like not kosher to do that? He's supposed to just die, no? How did he last for 80 years and become a tzduki at the end? What does that even mean? Now we can understand based on what we said. His garbage took him harbet. At that time, when this was happening, Beis HaMikdash, there were a lot of tzukim. Tzukim were people that rejected the Torah Shebal Peh. They said, whatever says Torah Shebal Chsav, we interpret it that way. But Torah Shebal Peh, who says there's such a thing? And they tried to convince everybody of their approach. So they were metame. They were metame the physical world. It became like an atmosphere where that had an impact and had to be fought off, to such an extent that over time, it affected even the Kohen Gadol. So David Amalek tells us that that every chazid should daven for what's called an ace mitzoy. Mitzoy is from the word matzah, like a mitzia, like something you find. Ace means a time. So on this, a chazid should daven le'ace mitzoy, for the time of finding? It's like a very strange pasuk. What do you mean he should daven now for the time where he finds something else? What does that mean? Klaimer, in other words, at a time when bad ideas, rejection of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, rejection of Torah and whatnot, is present, is found in the world, like in our days. But that all of the spirits of just doing whatever you want and breaking boundaries and just stam entertainment for no good reason. All of this is rooted in the fact that there's no responsibility to Hashem and His Torah. At a time like that, when it's so present in the world, so potentially impactful through the walls, through osmosis. So even the chassid has to daven le'eis mitzoy for a time when these things are present and found in the world. He has to daven to be protected from it. Even the chassid, that's his point. Why? What do you mean, even the chassid? Because you can't protect yourself from osmosis. Let's shift the for a minute. The same idea, but mashal, amad avar doyme. Way before Freud, way before psychology was a thing, we had Chazal, we had Musar, we had the Rambam. The Rambam, for example, right? He died in the early 1200s. The Rambam writes in, I believe it's the third parak of Hilchos Deos, that the Rambam writes that you should know, you got to be careful who your friends are, you got to be careful where you live, you got to be careful what country you raise your children in. Because everything has an impact subconsciously. Now, he doesn't write subconsciously, right? He doesn't talk about, you know, the id and the ego and all these kinds of things. He doesn't speak about it in those terms. But he says that a person is impacted by these things without being aware of it. Subconsciously. We all know, everyone here is an American. Americans are different than Israelis. Americans are different than Russians. There are just different cultural impacts that it had on us, and we had nothing to do with it, and we're not even aware of it. And it impacts us without noticing it, because that's the way we grew up, and whoever noticed such especially, a thing. What?
Especially Russians.
Yeah, there's like a certain roughness.
They have like the idea, like, he's like, I see them move, and then grow apart, and like, don't ever interact with the outside world. And they're Americans, technically.
So, you know, to the extent that they've been impacted by other cultural mores, they have the same issues. But to the extent, what I mean is that people that have encountered culture. Americans have a very clear culture. Russians have a culture.
Especially when they see when they suddenly start saying all these great things about Putin.
So here it's in Perek Vav of Hilchos Deos. The Rambam writes, not going to break you on Perek Vav. Derech briyaser shel adam lias nimshach b'deyos of amayis avach reyav v'chaverav. It's natural. The way that a man is created is to be drawn in his perceptions and even his actions, which are a result of his perceptions often, after his friends, his close friends, his distant friends, the noyeg emidagan shem edinasoi, and to accustom himself to the way that the people in his country act and think and behave. The fichav tzarech adam lehiskabel et tzadikim v'leishav et l'achachamim tamid. That's why you always have to be around tzadikim and chachamim all the time. Kidei sheyilmud b'maaseyim. What do you mean? Why would I learn from the Rishayim? I'm a nice guy. And just, we don't realize how we're being impacted. That's the problem. So that's what Elia is saying, is that because things can impact even the physical, so it impacts the tzaddik, because he's not putting himself next to a Rasha, but maybe he ends up in a situation where the physical, where the air is just contagious. It's in the air. He has to daven. He has to daven. The Kaddish Baruch Hu should protect him. Anyway, so that's when he quotes this idea that from Mesiyas Yisharim, that when a person does a virus, it impacts the physical.
What?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sometimes you're very spiritually sensitive. You can feel the
tama. You can, right?
When I walk into, I was in the Sephardic place in the Josh learning, and people walk, and they said, I hear people saying, wow, I feel this great holiness in this place. You can feel the spirituality. Some people, and I said, yeah, I agree, I feel it in here. So it's true.
Sometimes you'll notice that, you know, you'll be like in some nicer place. It doesn't have to be like a place necessarily of incredible kedusha. You know, you could just be whatever. You go to another place for the weekend and you come back to Washington Heights, you know, and as soon as you get to the city, there's like, I don't know, there's something bizarre about the city. It's like, I remember one time I was with my friends when I was still in NYU, and we took, I don't know, like a music class or something like that. So we had to, part of the class was we had to go to the city and go to one of these concertos or something, or concert, everybody, yeah. So okay, why not just not go, you know? And so the answer is, well, you have to be honest, you know? So we had to go, we had to make sure we had a ticket stub, and we had to sit and listen to part of it so that we can say, we went, and we listened. So that's what we did. So we went, got our tickets, we went, we sat for a few minutes, we listened to it. And I remember one of my friends on the way in, we were walking through the city, and he's looking at one of the awnings that, you know, goes over one of the doors. He's like, I wonder if that's a din of Tumas Oihel. It was a joke, but it was like, you know, just sometimes it's so icky to go to places. You feel the ick. There's certain places where you can go to daven ma'ariv. You know, sometimes you miss your ma'ariv, you got to find another ma'ariv. So, okay, you go to different places. Certain places you go and you feel relaxed and you feel you can focus and you feel you can daven. There's other places you go, you feel like you just can't focus. So sometimes it's you, sometimes it's us, because our minds are just, you know, busy with so many things, we're stressed out. But sometimes it's the place. Sometimes the place has been working. You know, the Arizal, he said, you know what the Indian of a makom is? This is coming up soon with Avraham Avinu. After Avraham Avinu davens for stone, so it says right afterwards, it says Vayishka Vayashkem Avraham Lamakom Ahu, or something like that. That when he got up in the morning, he woke up to the place that he had stood before Hashem. It's like a funny puzzle. You don't wake up to the place. You wake up from your bed and you walk to the place and you wake up to the place. So Chazal say it's a remez that he had a place that he used to go to all the time. See, he had a makom kavua for tefillah. So when we think about a makom kavua, so we think two things. Number one, he should daven in a specific place all the time. You should have a shul, you should have a minyan, you should have a place to go daven. And within that place, you should have a makom in the place. That's your makom they always daven in. Says the Arizal, what's the significance of the makom? He says it's a battering ram. Because here's a makom that there's sometimes a mechitza, an iron wall between us and Hashem. When we daven, it's a battering ram. So we're breaking through the wall. So a physical makom can have an opening, can have a battering ram. So if a person was in a place like Avraham Avinu, he davened for stone, he had this incredible encounter with a Kaddish Baruch Hu that had an incredible impact. The first time we really find like a real tefillah explicitly in the Chumash. And he really had a real conversation and impact, a back and forth of Dari with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. So he went back to that place to daven, because that was a place where there was access. So that's the Arizal says. We should always have a makom kavua. It's a battering ram between us and the Kaddish Baruch Hu. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, so this whole idea was that you see many indications from Parshas Noach that there is a physical impact that Aruchnius has. The Medrash says that's what the Kaddish Baruch Hu told Adam HaRishon, that through your Averis you can destroy the physical world. And so you see in Parshas Noach by the animals, you see in Parshas Noach by the earth itself. That is the yisoid, that when it comes to ruchnias, it doesn't only have a ruchniastika impact. It can even have a physical impact. And saras isn't just, oh wow, look, it impacted the walls. It can always impact the walls. If saras is something that comes out in the walls, you can see it, and therefore you have to deal with it, and it becomes obvious to you, and it's a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the chiddush is not that it impacted the physical. That's not the chiddush. That's already dafur pashut. That's already earlier than that. And this amazing idea, he says, a scary idea, that the physical can impact in such a way because whatever we look at, we never use our eyes to see. The eyes are just the window that allows all of the information into our mind. But really, whatever we're looking at with our mind. So we have to be very careful what enters into our mind based on what we're looking at. That's how he says, that's the idea of looking at a Russia that it enters into the mind and it can create all kinds of shirhurim and all kinds of bad thoughts because of the tumah that's resting on the rasha.
So what if they're like, say, what if, for example, hypothetically, you have a roommate who's not explicitly bad to you? They're not bad to you. They're not interfering with your observance, and they're not threatening you or anything. But they themselves, they might speak lashon hara about other people.
So listen, you know, everybody does have errors. We're talking about people that know what's the wrong thing to do and do it anyway, and they don't care about the Ribbono Shel Olam, Rachmana Litzlan. You know, people like that. A Russia. People are misled. People have taivis. You know, listen, they ain't tzaddik b'aretz. Nobody's perfect, you know. We're talking about people that are mamish, like, you know. Yeah, they're trying to go against the Kaddish Baruch Hu. These are bad people. Most people are not like that. It's hard to find the real Russia, you know. People are just lost, b'zman hazeh. Just lost. But there are places of just tremendous tumah. You know? So what's the bottom line of all this? Where do we go? What are the practical applications of all of this? So it's twofold. It's number one, that whenever we're davening, we always need to daven to Kaddish Baruch Hu, you know, please protect me, put me in the right situations, you know? That's number one. Just like the tzaddik is davening le'eis mitzoy. We have to daven to Kaddish Baruch Hu, you know, please help me, give me the siyata d'shmaya, that I should be in the right situations, around the right people, things like that, you know? Connect, like the Rambam said, connect the tzaddikim because by what?
By association.
Because it's what do you call it? Osmosis. That's the greatest way to see it. Say it, you know? You absorb from them with osmosis. Because there's a spiritual osmosis and a physical osmosis. There's the psychological, the subconscious osmosis. But he's saying more than that, that there's a physical osmosis too. And there's even an idea of view einecha ro'as es morecha, that you should look at tzaddikim. The same idea in the positive. Because by staring at that tzaddikim, all of the kiddusha that's there, it enters your mind. You know? My oldest, we used to have, there was an organization, used to send out this little booklet of all the pictures you could order of gidolim and tzaddikim, whatever. So we didn't order any of the pictures, but we kept all the catalogs. So we used to have this little book we put together of like all these different rebbeim. So I had Elisha. He was, I don't know, he was so young. He barely, you know, knew anything. Couldn't read, that's for sure. But he would point at this picture and we would say, who's that? He would say, the Ragatzaver. You know? So that was like a very positive thing, you know, to raise children looking at tzaddikim. But in any case, so that's number one. We always have to daven that Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us a siyata d'shmaya, that we should be in places and connect to people, that through osmosis we're able to grow. And number two, so we have to make sure to put ourselves in places where we're not going to be negatively impacted, and to try to stay away from places where there have, by osmosis, a negative impact, and put ourselves in places where there's a positive impact. Tefillah and lemaisa, just have to focus on. But I thought that was an unbelievable mahalach. They say, there's a maisa, they say that Rav Elia Lopian went to the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, for a bracha, whatever the matzav was. So the Ger looks at him and says, someone that has Gili Elio needs to come to me for a bracha? Sorry, what? The Ger Rebbe looked at him and saw, how did he know? That Rav Elia had seen Elio and Navi. How did he see Elio and Navi? So there was a maisa that years earlier, Rav Elia's wife apparently was like really, really, really sick. And the doctors had given up hope and said there's no cure. So she came back home or whatever, and he was learning, davening, whatever, in the next room, and then the family was with her and whatever. And all of a sudden, this random person walks in and says, what's going on? Everything okay? Sarah Revelia told him, no, my wife is really in a desperate situation. Doctors have given up hope. He says, oh, it's no big deal. Just take this, you know, herb or whatever. He told him to go get stuff from like outside, you know, some herbs or whatever, leaves, whatever it was. He says, and boil it up, this, that, and the other thing. Give it to her and she'll be fine. She said, okay. So that's what they did, and she got better. And he always suspected that it was Elio and Navi, you know, but he never told anybody about it. So when he came to the Sfas Emes says, someone has Gili Elio Navi needs a bracha from me. So he says, someone that knows that I had Gili Elio, that's the person that I want the bracha from. How did you know that?
It means you had Gili Elio, and maybe he told you. I don't know. So yeah, I want a brother. So he was a very special person, a very spiritually sensitive person, you know. So my shaychus to him, your shaychus to him, is because my Rebbe, Rav Elio Dov Glucksman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, so he had shaychus for Rav Elio in Eretz Yisrael when he was there. So he, you know, he had some things to say over from Rav Elio. So he's sort of like our great Rebbe in some way or another. So we all have a shtickle connection out to him.
Rav Elio had Gilead.
That story is about Rav Elio Lopian.
Yes.
That he went to the Sfas Emes, and Sfas Emes said, "You don't need a bracha from me. Someone has Gilead, and he's a bracha from me."
Yeah, okay, so he's a white bracha.
So Rav Elio responded to him, "If you know that I had Gilead, Leo, it's because you had Gilead, Leo, and more than I ever did, because he just came to me to tell me what the medicine to give my wife." So yeah, I don't want a bracha. That's the story. Of course. But this is from a different place, from Eretz Yisrael. I asked Rav Glucksman, I said to him, because Rav Glucksman was from Austria originally, and he lost his parents at a very young age. So right before the war, he went to England, right before World War II. So he ended up getting, you know, kicked off of out of England, sent to Australia, and that whole ship with the torpedo story. Remember the story?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Anyway, so he ended up eventually going to Eretz Yisrael. So he became, he was very close to the Chazon Ish and the Stipler. Rav Chaim Kanievsky was like, you know, this young guy learning in the back of the room, you know. So I asked him once, because he used to tell me a lot about the Gedolim of Eretz Yisrael. Like, he knew a lot of these Gedolim. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. He said over a vort from Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. He heard from Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer at Malkiel's Bris. Like, these are like Gedolim from, like, wow, previous generations. So I asked him, did you know any of the Gedolim from Europe? So he said, no, not really. He says, one time Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Hashem Yinkam Damo, came to Washington Heights to be by Rav Schwab. Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the Rav of Breuers. And before, now it's Rav Mantel, before him was Rav Geli, and before Rav Geli was Rav Schwab. So he said, that. So he got to how he met Rav Elchanan, not from Europe, but from when he came to America before, at that time. And before World War II. And, that's not possible. He heard this from Rav Schwab. He didn't meet him. He heard from Rav Schwab. So Rav Schwab was here. Rav Glusman was not here at the time. He heard from Rav Schwab that Rav Schwab had Rav Elchanan over before the war. Is it possible? Somehow. No, couldn't have been. Okay, start over the whole story. Rav Schwab knew Rav Elchanan Wasserman from Europe. He couldn't have had him in America. He wouldn't have been here. So in any case, so what Rav Schwab told Rav Glucksman was that he had never seen anyone say Asher Yotzar like Rav Elchanan Wasserman. You know what Rav Elchanan Wasserman looked like? If you get a chance, Google Rav Elchanan Wasserman. There's like one picture of him. It's like the scariest picture you'll ever see. He was this very large man and like super serious. So, you know, when Rav Schwab says he'd never seen anyone say Asher, it's like that. You can only imagine like the powerful concentration of like a person like Rav Elchanan Wasserman. They say that Rav Elchanan, I forgot, smiled or laughed like only like three times in his life. One of the times was when he was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. He was very close to the Chofetz Chaim. Yeah. And he had asked the Chofetz Chaim to be sandik at the bris of his son. And the Chofetz Chaim had agreed, he said, if I can make it. So the morning of the bris came, the Chofetz Chaim was not to be found. So Rav Elchanan was, you know, saddened. Anyway, so they're about to start the bris, someone else will be the sandik, whatever, and all of a sudden in walks the Chofetz Chaim. He says, boy, did I grin. And another time he said was with Simchas Torah in Yeshiva in Radin. And Rav Elchanan was there in Radin. And the Chofetz Chaim at that time was very old. Very, very old. Very frail. And any minyanim that were happening by the Chofetz Chaim were happening in Chofetz Chaim's house. But Simchas Torah, he said he wanted to be in the yeshiva. So they carried him like in his bed or something like that, like to the yeshiva, and everyone was dancing around the Sefer Torah, and when they saw the Chofetz Chaim came in, they started dancing around the living, breathing Sefer Torah. And apparently, so the Ramim, the Rebbeim, whatever, started dancing in front of the Chofetz Chaim. So Rav Elchanan, if you can imagine, as I can't, started dancing in front of the Chofetz Chaim. He says, the Chofetz Chaim saw that and started to clap. He says, boy, did I grin. But other than that, one other time, like apparently he never really grinned. You know, he was like, very serious. Anyway, I thought it was a very, very interesting word. Mm-hmm.